It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 74th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Sorry I've been away a little while. There's been a lot of transition in my life, and I'm glad to have the podcast now available at wordofthenerdonline.com. I hope you enjoy it, too. If you're new to the podcast, usually what happens is I interview a comic creator, and I'll often talk news and previews with Gianluca Glaser. I'll sometimes give comics reviews and sometimes check out a local comic shop. But this time, we're just going to stick to two very important things. I got a very important interview with Ian Brill, creator of Freelancers, as well as Darkwing Duck, and a very interesting Dracula book that we're going to talk about. I think you'll enjoy that interview, and then we're going to go straight into news and previews with Gianluca, and we'll talk about a lot of news and catch up on things we haven't talked about in a while. As always, there's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I want to welcome to the podcast Ian Brill, comics creator of such wonderful things as Darkwing Duck comic, Dracula comic, and also as a Freelancers coming out from Boom Studios. So how are you doing today, Ian?
I'm doing great, Wayne. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, glad to talk with you. Let's start off by talking about Freelancers. Do you want to talk a little bit about what the story's about and how it came to be?
Sure. It's two young women in Los Angeles. Their job as freelancers means that they are the people that are kind of not Mr. Fix-It, but Misfix-Its, where you get, if people want some jobs done off the book, whether that's if someone's been kidnapped and you want to get back the person who's been abducted, or a lot of times kidnap and rescue, but a lot of it is finding evidence or information that they need, sort of privatized stuff, sort of almost bounty hunter stuff, all these little odd jobs. And if you want it off the books, they're the people to call. That they're raising a kung fu orphanage, Val and Cassie are their names. Mm-hmm. And they have this whole world of freelancers in the Los Angeles underground that we get to explore, and a lot of cool kung fu action and urban espionage stuff, all in one great book, illustrated, I should say, by Joshua Covey, who is fantastic. I mean, his work is going to really knock people out when they see it. And created by Matt Gagnon, who's the editor-in-chief at Boom, and Felipe Smith, who's a wonderful cartoonist who did MBQ at Tokyo Pop and Peepo Chu at Kodansha, which is published in America by Vertical. So I'm very lucky to be writing. They entrusted me with their creation, which I'm incredibly grateful for. And, it's a lot of fun.
Great. Now, I have to say, I've gotten to see the teaser page of it, and yeah, it made me laugh out loud twice.
Oh, boy. Awesome. Thank you.
Which was really cool. You start out by seeing a guy by the name of Patrick Sunnyside, yeah, which yeah, I just thought, number one, made me smile. It was a great thing.
Yeah.
But then he's trying to get them to create an ad, and so what he does is he develops a drawing, and it looks like Cass is the blonde one, and she's the one that there's a drawing of.
Yeah.
And she's kind of in a Spider-Man-like pose, you know, where Spider-Man's toe can go in his ear, kind of.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of drawing. And I get a big kick when she looks at it, and when Cass sees it, she goes, "What the hell, Patrick? Are you going to send us to a chiropractor first?"
Yeah.
That made me laugh right out loud, because so many times in comics, the drawings are such that it's physically impossible to get the human body into that position.
Yeah, no, we wanted to have fun with that, kind of the expectations put on a woman, both kind of the way they're portrayed in comics and then is like in life and life in the entertainment industry, for them to be, these are two women who are, they both have their very own distinct but related outlooks, and they have plenty of agency of their own. And I wanted to show them when they're given something like that, they're not just going to go along with it. They're going to react to it. They have very different reactions to it, but different reactions that have a place, you know, in a distinct character outlook, which is, you know, always the fun of writing. So I'm glad you enjoyed it, Wayne.
Well, there's not only that. One other thing I want to get to. She says, Cass says that she doesn't want to do it. And then, of course, Val says, I'll do it. So I'll absolutely do it if you waive your commission. And the wonderful drawing of the surprise on Patrick Sunnyside's face just made me laugh out loud.
Joshua is such a joy to work with an artist that can do facial expressions. Joshua can do great action, but there are so many guys who can do great action. There's not so many that can do great facial expressions, great acting from their characters. And we're very lucky to have a guy who can get across the spectrum of human emotion like that. So, I don't need to put a word balloon in Sunnyside's mouth at that point. It's just his reaction alone, Joshua's illustration alone, sells it, and that's one of the great parts of working on this book.
Now, there's another page, too, that I want to talk a little bit about. Then I want to get into the role of women and women in comics. But there's another page that came out where they're actually fighting a group of guys, and they're carrying on a conversation while the fight's going on, which is very reminiscent to me of the Avengers from the UK, where Steed and Mrs. Peel, they'd be driving in this car, and the car would be speeding all over the place, and they'd go inside, and they'd be discussing the latest movie they saw.
Yeah,
The action would be so going on and on and on, and they couldn't, they couldn't be bothered with that because, that's commonplace to them. What I get a kick out of too is what she's saying, and Cass says they come off less as bounty hunters and more like girls working at a brothel, specializing in unique and specific fetishes.
Yeah.
And that made me the whole discussion that they go on while they're beating the tar out of these guys. Just made me laugh out loud again. I just think this is – I'm just looking forward to this book because it's not only going to be a great adventure book, it's also going to be very witty. And the comedy is so hard in comics, it just seems like. So I'm really looking forward to this because you're able to do both aspects really well.
That's what entertains me a lot of the time. Not that everything I write is funny, but I love when I get to have characters where you can have a back and forth, a sense of humor. It's not artificial. It's born out of the character's disposition. That is a lot of fun to do. So I'm glad it's fun for you to read because it's fun for me to write.
Yeah, it's also the art's, again, clean and easy to read what's going on, so I really like that. So I'm very fascinated about it. And, of course, I do want to talk with you about women and the fact that you've got two women leads, because a lot of comics don't have women in the lead roles. You'll often have them being supportive characters. Now, you've got exceptions to that rule, of course. You've got Batgirl, you've got other ones that are on Batwoman, and different Marvel characters that have their own books. But it's really interesting, and to me, I'm a big believer that we need to have more female leads in comics. So on that level, too, I was very happy to see the book, because I really do think that we need to expose not only men but women to other women in comic roles. And one thing I do want to mention is that oftentimes I find it really difficult that women who are in lead roles, not only in television but in comics, they'll often tend to be one kind of person. Men can be scoundrels and they can be geniuses, they can be everything, but a woman tends to have to be one kind of person. And so what I like is the fact that these two are very different personalities, and I really hope that kind of opens it up a little more for female characters in comics.
Really great observations there, Wayne. Thank you. Yeah, for me, one of my big motivations whenever I'm writing is basically not to be bored, because if I'm bored, I figure the reader will be bored. And one thing to keep from being bored is to have multiple things going on with a character, and it's a tricky high wire act because I want these characters to be multifaceted, but I don't want things that necessarily contradict the characters, even though everybody is filled with some kind of self-contradiction that's wrapped up in their disposition. So you want it to characterize it where this is a person going through a process. I mean, I'm interested in people's internal battles as much as their external battles, because the internal battles are the ones that keep going and are the ones that never are quite finished, which lends them perfectly to comics, where we have characters going on and on forever. So that kind of stuff always interests me, and especially interests me the fact that we have two characters who grew up together, and they know each other better than anybody else, but they're very different. Cass is often much more methodical and much more intellectual in how she goes about things, and Val is much more impulsive. And they kind of allow each other this behavior because, in some ways, I suppose, Val, being the impulsive one, envies Cass's intellectualism, as does Cass envy Val's very rough and tumble spirit. So they play off each other. They like the way that they're different from each other. And that's a fun thing to write. I enjoy characters who enjoy themselves and enjoy the people around each other. That's a way to win over the reader when they're reading the book. So it's you know, that's a lot of the fun of the series.
Well, I got a big kick out of what happens to the cell phone that they're reading the message on. She takes the cell phone and clubs the guy in the head with it.
Yeah. And
apparently, I don't know if it still works or not, but she's picking it up off the ground.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
So that all that kind of stuff makes me laugh. I like a lighter touch. There's a lot of darker and morose comics, and it's a nice change of pace to see something that's got a much lighter tone to it and a lot more fun, because the comic books, when I was growing up, tended to be a lot more fun than they are now. So I'm really happy to see something. The Freelancers looks like a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, that's definitely what we're going for. A lot of big, you know, you got the big thrills and chills and all that stuff wrapped up in two very big, bright characters. You know, I know what you're saying. I mean, I do, like, Dracula itself is a pretty gloomy book, so it is fun for me to switch off on these different, it's almost like different temperatures. You know, Dracula can be pretty cold, and then Freelancers is pretty hot, so it's fun to do that.
I want to get to Dracula in a couple of minutes, but before we get to that, I want to wrap up on the Freelancer stuff, in that, you know, a lot of the times I enjoy the product that Boom Studios makes because it's different. You don't necessarily have Long John's characters, you know, superheroes all the time.
Uh-huh.
You get to have a lot of variety in the characters, and I think that's missing in many of the other companies. So Boom seems to be able to do these things extremely well, and that's why another thing I really liked about Freelancers is the fact that they are real people. And one of the things I was curious about, did you base these women on anybody that you know?
Well, it was Matt and Felipe who created these characters. I don't know if they based on anybody they know. They've never said that. I mean, whenever I'm creating any character, it's always you take bits and pieces from people you know or just things you see in life that you think are interesting, and then you have them react against the plot of the story, and, you know, there's your chemistry. So that's one thing I always like to do when I'm writing.
Mm-hmm. It looks like Cass is Caucasian. Val, is she Hispanic?
No, she's meant to be half Filipino, half Chinese.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I think I read that someplace. That's good. Of course, that right there is a nice character. We don't get to see that very much in comics either, that kind of mix.
No, but
so I like that.
But again, you see that a lot in the modern world, especially in Los Angeles. Those are two, Filipino and Chinese are two ethnicities that are represented in the city, and we wanted to put that in the characters as well. So that's, you know, also fun to do.
Yeah, well, I like the fact that they're so very different from each other and they get along real well. So, you know, those are great fun things about it. It's a monthly ongoing comic, so
yeah. We
can expect it every month, which is kind of a cool thing. I really like it. Now, you've got some other illustrations, too. You've got very different covers and art that's done from it. There are a series of posters that say she's a freelancer. Who are those done by?
Those are the marketing that Boom put out. I believe those are Felipe's original character designs. Felipe's original character designs.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Because they have a different kind of a look to them than the regular art in the comic does, and I was just kind of curious as to how they came to be. So it's a lot of fun to read. I really get a kick out of the characters. You see them going around and chasing people, and there's it looks like Cass brandishes a sword at times, mm-hmm. and Val has she's much more of the gun-toting person.
Yeah, well, they're trained in all kinds of combat. That's one of the things they learned at their alma mater, the House of Little Fortunes, which is this kung fu orphanage. Artists get to trick them out with all kinds of stuff.
Well, I'm kind of fascinated also, too, and I was kind of holding this back towards the end, a kung fu orphanage.
Yeah.
I haven't seen many of those. Is that something unique to Los Angeles?
It's something Matt Felipe came up with, sort of inspired by what was in Jackie Chan's autobiography. Not that it was an orphanage, but it was a performance school, an acrobatic performance school. And then the idea was just to take that and make it bigger, make it about kung fu, strictly or stridently about kung fu. And then it's a fun idea for a book, and it is a lot of fun to write.
Great. Great. Well, I'm looking forward to Freelancers. The couple pages that I've seen so far really got me excited about reading it. And it looks like it's going to be a great fun book for me to add to my list that I get every month. So looking forward to that.
Hey, sure.
Let's talk a little bit about Dracula World Order.
Sure.
Which I like, too, because, you know, Dracula is a very popular character. And I'm fascinated. You seem to take a very different spin on the character than I've seen in the past. I think it was Kurt Busiek did a Dracula book for Boom not that long ago.
Yeah.
And he had kind of a different take to it. Do you want to talk a little bit about the Dracula World Order and, you know, how this came to be?
It's my first creator-owned book. We had a self-published one-shot come out in June, still available. If you go to DraculaWorldOrder.com, you can see the resource of which it's available. It's also available at ThingsFromAnotherWorld.com as well as Comixology.com digitally. It's a book that features four fantastic artists, Tanzi Zonic, Rasan Ekedel, Declan Shalvey, and Gabriel Hardman, all of them very, very lucky to have worked with and all did amazing work about the story where Dracula has taken over the world. Basically, he figured in a world where there's so much economic inequity or economic inequality, he only had to turn the top 1% of the world into vampires, and they would in turn make the bottom 99% of the world into basically a blood supply or labor. And the story starts with Alexandru, Dracula's son, and his majordomo deciding to start a revolution against them when he flashes back to his origins and why he became his father's right-hand man. And from there, we introduce a lot more characters and you see more of the world. It's a book I love doing, and there are certainly plans to do a lot more of it. So stay tuned in that regard.
Okay, because I'm fascinated because, you know, zombies are kind of the new vampires, but yet vampires are still very popular.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of interested, when you decided to do the book, what did you decide to do differently that might differentiate it from other vampire lore, like, Angel from Buffy and those kinds of things?
Well, what I can say is, for me, the appeal of vampires was not necessarily the sexual element, although that is there. I do think that's fun to play with. That's not the forefront, nor is it the outcast, then, because in my book, they've taken over the world, so there's not an outcast element, although you can argue that Alexandru makes himself an outcast. What was interesting to me about vampires was the idea of thirst and the idea of greed, whether it's the greed for money, or you can make all kinds of metaphors. I'm sure there's been allusions to addictions or drug addictions with vampires. And for this one, I wanted to make it about corporate greed or the kind of stuff you see in the world. I was going to say in the world today, but I think it's kind of always been with us. And that, to me, was the interesting metaphor. All these stories about monsters are fueled, the best ones at least, are fueled by metaphor. And that's the one I wanted to play with, the idea that you had a world that was so rocked by greed that the scales had tipped to such a dramatic degree that even the person fighting against it was interpolated into this world. But, of course, then he finds other people to work with who are not, but then they have rifts with each other, and so we can play off these differences, you know, circles upon circles, that kind of stuff, play off all these different kinds of takes on the world. That was the thing for me, to make it about almost greed and a myopic drive to success is a kind of the vampire's bloodthirst.
See, I haven't read this yet, but as soon as we get done here, I'm going to go right after it because I'm dying to read it. I'll probably go out to Comixology and get it.
Sure.
The thing that fascinates me about what you're saying is that you're going from a different angle than many of these stories go. Usually we're watching somebody trying to take over the world, but you're doing a story in which the world has already been conquered, basically. And that gives you a very different kind of story to tell.
Yeah.
So that makes me really interested because I haven't read many of those. I mean, there was Mark Waid did Empire, in which I think the guy that looked like Dr. Doom had basically taken over.
Yeah.
You have to see things very differently, and you're going to tell a very different kind of story, and that interests me. I mean, I've read people trying to take over the world as long as I've been reading comics.
Yeah, yeah.
So to hear somebody that's actually doing something different, I like that.
It is. I mean, Empire was on my mind. I would say, though, that even though it is rare, I would argue that Star Wars, the original Star Wars trilogy, is an example of that, where you have the Empire in control, and they have the Death Star, and they can blow up planets the touch of a button, and you have, you know, these rebels who are trying to take back. I think that was definitely an example of that kind of story. I think people will always, you know, you want to find characters that people sympathize with that will get the readers to be captivated. And then once you have their attention, you have to really make it worth their while. And I realized If people see a photo or watch a video of a bear getting chased by a raccoon, this is something I should say that Dan Harmon, the creator of Community and was a writer, comic book writer himself, on the book Scud the Disposable Assassin. He has this great essays about writing on the Channel 101 website. He said that if you see a bear getting chased by a raccoon, people will sympathize or identify with the raccoon. They don't identify with the bear. They don't identify with the person bringing doom down on someone. People will always go for the underdog, and they'll go for the people who are trying to fight back, whether that's in sports. How many stories, how movies start with a guy who is capable but is not appreciated by those around him, down on his luck. It seems, you know, guys like Ben Stiller and Jim Carrey have made careers out of playing that. And going back to, you know, like Jimmy Stewart, going back to, like, you know, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, that those are always characters that people love. So you don't see a lot, maybe necessarily, you don't see this in genre fiction or a lot of times in comic books, but it still goes back to that underdog rebellion thing that I think readers, especially American readers, but not just American readers, really go for.
Well, it's like David Peterson in his Mouse Guard.
Yeah, that was
another He draws mice very realistically, you know. Most of them, you get sort of anthropomorphic mice. They got a mouse head, kind of, and the rest of the body looks human, and they're going around. The thing I loved about Mouse Guard is that if a mouse could stand on its back legs and carry a sword, that's what it would look like. Yeah. You know, it looked very realistic.
Yeah.
And what you're saying about that makes me think very much along those lines, that people like to cheer for the underdog.
Yeah.
And I think about that all the time. So the great thing about Dracula is the ultimate winner, basically, you know.
Yeah.
He's the top of the food chain, basically. And so to see him, you know, actually achieve that, what would he do if he got there? That's something I think is just really fascinating.
Yeah, no, it is fun. It is as influenced as I am by the X-Men comics, which I've been reading since I've been reading comics. It is fun to play with the idea that vampires are kind of the next stage in human evolution, at least in my world, and then for them to go with that and throw that against the wall and see what drama we can get from there. So, you know, that's the fun of it.
Okay, so you can get the one shot. We can access that now. Any ideas when the future issues will be coming out?
What I can say is I have an artist who is fantastic. I can't say who right now, but he's a great guy who's done a lot of work at various companies, who's just excited about the book as I am. And we have a 4-issue follow-up miniseries planned out. I have the first script written. I'm writing the second one right now. He's got 2 pages of art done, and basically we're going to publishers, letting them see what's up, and we'll see if they dig it. There's a lot of options available to the independent creator. I self-published this and got it available digitally. I don't know if that would necessarily work for a series or even a mini-series. It's just so much work, maybe without the self-publishing aspect, but I don't want to commit to anything in that regard right now. I'm just looking at all options, but right now I want to, want to see if we can find a publishing partner who I'm happy to talk to, and we're both happy with the agreement, and see if we can go from there. But it's definitely going to happen some way, whatever the myriad of options that are available now, which I'm very lucky to be creating independent creator-owned comics at this time, and see what's up. So,
now, if we want to find out when announcements come out, is there a place that we can go to get that information?
DraculaWorldOrder.com is a Tumblr blog, which people can follow for that. Just also my Twitter, which is iBrill, IBRILL. I had to remember the order of my own last name there. iBrill, Twitter.com/iBrill is another way to find that. So whenever there's news about that or freelancers or anything, I will announce it there.
Okay, now I want to jump 180 degrees the other direction, because one of the things that you worked on that I enjoyed very much, and I read them and really loved them, was the Darkwing Duck comics.
Excellent.
When Boom Studios was doing those.
Thank you for the kind words there.
Now, I loved, and I'm trying to remember if you wrote this or who did. He always has this phrase in which he says, "And I am the terror that flaps in the night."
Uh-huh.
Then he does another pop, a sort of a modern thing that would terrorize us. And the one that made me laugh out loud was when I saw it. It says, "I'm the terror that flaps in the night. I am the classic rock band that refuses to stop touring."
I think that whole motif was from that cartoon. I think that's also from the cartoon, maybe.
Oh, was it?
I am the thing that goes bump in the night. I'm the neuroses that requires a $500 an hour shrink. I am the terror that flaps in the night. I am the jailer who throws away the key. I am the moth that seeks your perchlight. I am the flea you cannot flick. I am the combination lock on the vaults of justice. I am the icky bug that crawls up your trouser leg. I don't need an appointment. I am the pin that will burst your bubble. I am the spider who nips at your neck. I am the little mouse that eats your cheese. I am the cloud that rains on your hit parade. I am the clipper that trims your hedges. I am the repairman who tells you your warranty has run out. I am the butter that burns in your pan. I am the hair in the lens of your projector. I am...
DW, why couldn't we go through the gate like everybody else?
Because I am not like everybody else. I am the scourge that... pecks at your nightmares.
I honestly can't remember. I wrote a bunch of those during the course of the book. I could not tell you each individual one, except maybe the one that's in the opening double splash of the first issue, because that's one we worked on a lot, although I can't even remember what we did there. But I wrote a lot of those. But yeah, it's that was a motif started in the cartoons. That's so much fun. It's a great little joke machine to put all the things there. And that was one of the many, many aspects that made the book so fun to write.
Yeah, it was such a great read for me because, you know, obviously Darkwing Duck is kind of a Batman-like character.
Yeah.
And Batman happens to be my favorite hero. So when I saw the cartoon coming on back in the day, I started to watch it just because I was fascinated to see how would Disney handle Batman.
Yeah.
So it was kind of serious in many ways. And the comic came out and they had all these multiple Earth Darkwing Ducks.
Yeah.
All that good stuff was great fun, and that was, if you were a comics fan, you got the in-joke, and I loved reading them, and it was just such a wonderful thing to see. And if you were a kid, and you probably had never read any of this stuff, you'd still enjoy it, but as an experienced comic reader or a seasoned comic reader, I really got a lot out of those stories, because those were just so much fun to allude to comic history that we knew so well.
Yeah, that was one of the fun aspects of the book. I mean, I loved coming up, that was our second storyline, coming up with all the multiple Darkwings.
Yeah.
That was, you know, of just alternate timelines and stuff like that is a lot of fun for me to play with. I like those stories, so it was fun for me to do stuff with that.
Yeah, well, it was great. All the Darkwings I enjoyed from Boom. I bought them all, and I enjoyed them greatly. A lot of the Disney stuff that Boom did I really enjoyed, so I read them all. I'm sorry that those days are over. It's gone over to Marvel, and you know, God help us when we'll ever see that again. But I really wanted to tell you how much I enjoyed those Darkwing Ducks as well. So I just hope you get to write for a long time, because I enjoy your writing a lot.
Oh, thanks so much, Wayne. I really appreciate that. Well, I will always be writing, so the light will shine. So hopefully it'll be shown in a way people can read it.
Okay. Now, are there any other projects that you're working on that you can tell us about besides the ones that we've talked about?
No, I've got some stuff going on, but nothing I can announce right now. Another all-ages thing, and then more Dracula, and then I'm also working on more creator-owned stuff, and then hopefully I can announce those soon. We'll see, okay. But, you know, it's always, I've got a ton of stuff going on, and it's just a matter of finding the time to make it happen. I'm writing freelancers, writing more DWO, writing this all-ages thing. I added 3 or 4 more stuff to my plate because I thought I wasn't busy enough. And there we go. So it's a lot of stuff happening. So hopefully you'll be able to indulge in it soon.
Great. Well, I'll give you as much money as I can. And
thank you.
When we get done here, I'm heading towards Comixology. So it's good talking with you, Ian, and much success. And you know, keep writing. If for nobody else, let me enjoy your writing anyway.
Sure. Wayne, I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for the kind words. Hope you enjoyed the books.
Oh, I surely will. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, man. The shadows down in the night. Somewhere some villain schemes, but his number's up. Shadow in the skies. No.
Okay, it's time once again for news and previews, and back with me, as always, is Gianluca Glazer. How you doing, Gianluca?
I'm doing good, and we're back.
Yay, good for us.
Word.
Word of the Nerd, isn't that great?
Yeah.
Something fun, something good, and back on iTunes, too, which is lovely.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about news that's happened since the last time we talked. What news have you got for us?
Well, I mean, we haven't talked for a while, so, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of things have happened since, you know, we last spoke. Mm-hmm. The Boys, you know, Garth Ennis's book ended, mm-hmm. you know, since we last talked. Disney bought Lucasfilm.
Yeah.
You know, that was big.
What do you think about that?
It's good, you know, the kind of perspective they're doing now, Star Wars movies again, and everyone's speculating who's going to be directing them, and a lot of big names are being thrown about. But what I'm curious about is what's going to eventually happen to Dark Horse and their license with the Star Wars comics.
Well, we know the answer to that.
Well, that's kind of sad. I mean, for right now, there's not going to be any change, but once the license is up, I think probably in a year, you know, that's a lot of bread and butter there for Dark Horse. They make a lot of money through their Star Wars books.
Yeah, we've seen, unfortunately, what Marvel does in this situation. When Boom had the rights to the Disney animated, and, you know, including the Darkwing Duck and all those good things, those were all at Boom. And, boy, the second that contract was up, it went over to Marvel and died. Just like everything does, when stuff goes to Marvel, it just seems like any of these other properties just vanish. I mean, like Anita Blake, Vampire Hunter, she's gone. Where are all these things that they get the rights to? I'm always surprised by the fact that Marvel is so happy to get these things and then sit on them.
Yeah, well, you know, at the time, Boom was putting out, like, a lot of Disney stuff. They were putting out a lot of old collections being, you know, reprinted for the first time. You had the Pixar, you had Muppets, you had a lot of output coming in. And then it hasn't disappeared, per se, but the output has just been, like, one title every few months or so, you know.
The only one they've had recently was Toy Story. They had, like, a 4-issue miniseries of Toy Story, and then they did a couple of Muppets things.
Yeah.
But those are done. I mean, there's no sign of them on the schedule coming for months.
Yeah, and Dark Horse puts out a lot of Star Wars series. And so, yeah, I mean, once it goes over to Marvel, you'll be lucky if one series comes out.
Yeah. And then, of course, the rumor, too, is that the animated CGI show will go over from Cartoon Network over to Disney XD, which is where Amazing Spider-Man or Ultimate Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And others, and they've gone. And Avengers, of course, is done. Now they're going to have Avengers Assemble.
Yeah.
But, you know, the future is going to be interesting. As always, the Marvel and Disney, the conglomerate that eats everything in its sight, is going to be, as long as they don't get a hold of DC, I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well, some interesting news here. This is a rumor. It's not officially, announced by anybody. But according to Bleeding Cool, and they've been actually pretty accurate when it comes to these kind of rumors, but according to them, their sources, some of these titles from DC are going to have their respective writers leave during issues either 18, 19, or 20.
Okay.
And this is kind of sad. Batgirl. So that means Gail Simone.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Time is going to be leaving that series.
Hmm.
Birds of Prey, Dark Knight, Flash, Hawkman, and this is another one, not too big of a surprise, but Swamp Thing, Scott Snyder.
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that. Wait a minute, you said Dark Knight. I mean, Greg Hurwitz is going to leave the Dark Knight?
Apparently.
Oh, man. I'm sorry to hear that.
You know. With Swamp Thing, though, it's not too surprising. Scott Snyder has a lot of things on his plate. He's doing Batman. He's got an upcoming Man of Steel book coming out. He's got another series, miniseries coming out through Vertigo. So, you know, I guess eventually something had to give.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that because he's made Swamp Thing really great. I always worry when he leaves a book, is the book going to crumble at that point? You know, by the way, I understood, too, that he's taking a time off from American Vampire. It's going to hold off for a while.
Yeah, as well, too, you know.
So, that'll be, at least he's not leaving the book. He's just going to shelve the book for a couple months while he does his stuff.
Right. I guess with Swamp Thing, I guess he's going to leave after the Rot World storyline ends.
That's too bad, because he's really made it a good book, and he's talked it up really well.
Sure.
So I'm going to be sorry to see that, because, you know, from my understanding, like Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, after Jeff Lemire left it, now that book is on the chopping block. So,
yeah,
you know, I'm worried that Swamp Thing will do the same. That's too bad.
Yeah. A couple of interesting movie news, movie and television. The CW Network and Warner Brothers are looking for an actress in her early to mid-20s who's at least 5'8" to portray Wonder Woman in a new series that is being developed under the title Amazon.
Which reminds me very much of Arrow, interestingly enough.
Well, that's basically it. They're basically capitalizing on the popularity of Arrow, and they're going to try another kind of series like that. So.
Have you watched Arrow?
I have not, actually.
It's actually pretty good. There's a quick story I have to tell that always makes me smile. The people who do Arrow were familiar with the character when he was on Smallville. And they noticed that one of the things that happened on Smallville was there was a lot of chit-chat going on. This was always the thing I complained about. When I'd watch Smallville, I'd fast-forward through the chitty-chat parts, and then the action would start to happen. I'd slow down and watch it because nothing of any consequence happened during the chit-chat. And they noticed that, and they decided during Arrow they were not going to do that nearly as much. And I have to say, they followed through on that promise. It's a lot more action-oriented. They do chit-chat once in a while, but it's usually not longer than a minute or so. So they get to the point right away instead of, well, what do you think about this and what do you think about that, which is what Smallville was famous for. So
right.
I'm glad for that. If they're going to do Amazon, I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, and the title may change at some point. Mm-hmm. Never know.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be any worse than the previous Wonder Woman pilot that was done.
That was a sad thing. I watched it, and did you get a chance to look at it?
Yeah, it's online somewhere.
Yeah. What'd you think of it?
Violent.
Well, she'd go home to her little dog or something in the place, and she was kind of like the ultimate woman, you know. She had a job. She was a manager of a huge corporation. She was a superhero. The only thing she didn't have was a family, and I was waiting for her to have a husband and children and all that stuff. But it was just, I mean, it was okay. And then she changed uniforms depending on the circumstance, and I was just like a... And the whole idea was that all women like to change their clothes. And I was like, yikes. That's kind of a sexist thing to start off with, you know.
Sure.
So I'm glad that never hit the ground.
All right. In some controversial movie news, Guardians of the Galaxy got a writer and director with James Gunn.
Mm-hmm.
He had previously done Super with Will Smith. He also, you know, early in his career worked at Troma, you know, did Romeo and Juliet. But that's not the controversial part. Controversial part is ghosts of Blog's past have come back to haunt him. He did a list of superheroes I'd like to have sex with.
Oh.
It was an equal opportunity offender. It had both men and women. But it had people complaining. He deleted it, but I guess because it's cached in Google, people are still able to pull it up and complain. And basically, you know, he has a list of, and he put in a lot of witty comments for each entry. So he was being called sexist and homophobic, even though it really wasn't, you know. I mean, first of all, he's putting both men and women, so it's not sexist. And the homophobic stuff is just ridiculous because basically, you know, I don't know how dirty we can get here, but he was talking about the... Gambit being on the list, and that his wife wanted a three-way with him, and he really liked the idea of Gambit's genitals touching him.
Oh, you know, the thing that you and I have discussed before, you say stuff on the internet, and people think that it's just like a conversation with somebody.
Sure.
It goes away, you know, people forget after a while. People don't forget anything on the internet.
Nope.
As our buddy Rob Liefeld probably remembers.
Well, or will remember.
Yeah. The terrible thing about this is that, you know, I mean, what do you think about the Guardians of the Galaxy? They're not, to me, a big property. I know they've got a guy who's supposed to be playing Star-Lord or something, and I like Star-Lord as it was done by John Byrne way back in the day. they tried to revive him occasionally in Marvel, and they were quite as the same. But the thing that gets to me is the Guardians of the Galaxy are not that big of a deal. I guess they're trying to treat. They got Ant-Man coming, and then the Guardians of the Galaxy. Are we going to Marvel's basically going to trot out every property they've got in the movie and see which flies?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, it'll be as big as I guess the cast and promotion for the movie will be, and how good it is. You know, there's been like small titles in the past that have become really great movies that have created big interest, you know, in books, and then there's been movies based on big properties that have come out and flopped, you know. Mm-hmm. So it really is going to, you know, eventually just have to rest on the quality of the actual film. And if the film is good, then hey, Guardians of the Galaxy is going to be more popular than it's probably ever been.
Yeah. Well, I'm waiting for the Pet Avengers to get their own animated series, and the Great Lakes Avengers, which was their futile attempt to try to do the Giffen DeMatteis Justice League,
yeah,
which was just awful with Squirrel Girl and all this kind of stuff. I'm waiting for that to get its movie and stuff like that. So I guess Marvel, they want your last quarter, and so doggone, they'll trot anything out that they can to get it.
Yeah. A little bit of sad news. Seminal underground cartoonist Spain Rodriguez passed away at his home. He had a long battle of cancer, and he was 72 years old. His work first appeared in underground papers, especially stories starring his creation, Trash Man. And he was one of the cartoonists become widely known through Zap Comics, along with Robert Crumb, S. Clay Wilson, and Robert Williams.
Oh, interesting.
Sad news there.
Yeah.
A couple of stories on Neil Gaiman.
Okay.
Both Robert Kirkman and Neil Gaiman are among Hollywood's 25 most powerful authors, according to the Hollywood Reporter. Mm-hmm. Kirkman was ranked number 6, obviously because of The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. And Gaiman was number 23 because of his film Stardust, Caroline, and he's got two projects in development, The Graveyard Book and American Gods.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're all creeping in. We're all taking over comic writers.
You know, I see that more and more, comic-related things in television and movies.
Sure.
And then also TV and movies actually going into comics, too, which is, I guess, if there's a dollar to be made in there, they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm. The other Neil Gaiman news is the Gaiman Foundation. It was a recently founded entity. Has contributed $60,000 to the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. It's going to be used to support its education program, the organization announced today. The donations will be used to support initiatives such as Kids' Rights to Read Project, Banned Book Week, new resources such as the book Manga, Introduction, Challenges, and Best Practices. It's going to be used for parents and educators about using graphic novels.
So, interesting.
Good work on his part there.
Mm-hmm.
Viz Media has signed a deal with Pretty Ugly to produce a series of graphic novels based on the popular Ugly Doll line of plush toys.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I don't really play with Ugly Dolls. I haven't heard about them. Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. It's going to be under Viz's Kids imprint, and then going to be all ages kind of book. Mm-hmm. And then DC Digital News, they have recently informed retailers that in future weeks their digital sales will begin at 3 a.m. Eastern for all of their titles.
Oh, really? Because, you know, when I've been buying, like, Batman Legend of the Dark Knight, it hasn't come out until, like, 10 or 11 o'clock Eastern time.
Yeah, they kind of had, like, a weird schedule of releasing certain titles throughout the, throughout the day at different times.
That's a good idea because, you know, the sooner you can get to it, the more likely you are to buy it. If you, like, when I start my day, sometimes, like, just this morning I downloaded the most recent one because I'd forgotten about it since Thursday because, you know, it's not when I get up in the morning, it wasn't there. And so I just didn't remember. That's a smart idea.
Yeah, it's good. It should have really happened a long time ago, but I guess they worry that, oh, my, the book's available at 3 in the morning before comic stores are open. You know, there's really no controversy. I mean, if people are going to get the digital comic, they're going to get the digital comic.
Yeah.
You know, if it's just because it's a few hours earlier, it isn't going to make any difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that for all digital comics or just the ones on Wednesday?
That's their Wednesday release. Yeah.
Oh, nuts. I was hoping it would be for the Legends of the Dark Knight. I guess that won't affect that.
Perhaps not.
Okay. Well, I'll check. We'll update that as it come along.
Yeah. And I don't really have much else in terms of news. Do you have any stories yourself?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that interest me that have happened. It was announced a couple of months ago that your friend and mine, J. Michael Straczynski, was starting work on Superman Earth 1 Volume 3. Volume 2 came out and did very well. Mm-hmm. The pre-sales were high enough that DC gave him the go-ahead to start writing on that. Now, the interesting thing is recently it's come out in an interview that Shane Davis, who was the artist on the first two, apparently has not been approached to write or draw the third one.
Interesting.
So I wonder if they're going to change artists on this one or what. He said he hadn't been talked to about. I mean, still may be. It's probably right. Going to be a while.
Yeah,
because we know. Yeah, Geoff Johns is also going to do Batman Earth 1 Volume 2. So they may be trying to schedule these like one a year or something. If that's the case, then they – of course, you got to get Mr. Straczynski writing a way far in advance time in order for him to have the script ready so the artist can start on.
Yeah, that is true. He's also a very busy guy.
Yeah.
And the Earth 1 Volume 2 is no big surprise. That book did – the first volume did very well.
Mm-hmm.
Top seller, I think 2 months in a row, in fact.
I have to get a dig in. There was this wonderful, I was looking at a board about it, where they were talking about the fact that Shane Davis wasn't. And the one guy said, the words discerning and JMS really have no business being seen together. That shot is just for Mr. Straczynski.
That's
for him. Now, there's other stuff going on that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
There is, it's comic-related. David Peterson, every chance I get to talk about Mouse Guard, I am.
Oh, yeah.
He's already been signed up to come back for Baltimore Comic-Con in 2013, next year.
Oh, cool.
He did the cover of this year's program, and it was lovely, and I was so happy when I got to his booth because there was this long line of people waiting to get his autograph and buy stuff from him, which made me very happy. Mm-hmm. I've always felt Mouse Guard is one of those hidden gems that people never find out until... You know, usually until it's too late, but this time I'm so grateful that people are actually discovering and buying the book. Now, I don't see a word on whether he's going to do the cover yet or not, but I hope he does because that one went over real big at Baltimore Comic Con.
Okay. Yeah.
So he's going to be there. The show is going to take place on the second weekend of September, September 7th through 8th, and it's going to be at the Baltimore Convention Center, which is where it always is.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a good one. And there's also, since this is sort of related, Doctor Who has got a Christmas special coming out. They're finally starting to release some information about what's going on with it. Mm-hmm. It's called The Snowmen this time. It's on Christmas Day. It'll be released both in the UK and in America on Christmas Day. That's to stop people from torrenting.
Yeah.
Which they do dramatically, especially with British shows.
Sure.
It's going to be airing at 9 o'clock on Christmas night, and it's also going to be – that's in the UK and in the US. We also get the first glimpse of the new companion, and her name has finally come out. She's going to be called Clara. Jenna Louise Coleman is the name of the actress, and so that'll be the what they come up – that'll be the start of that new thing. So it'll be interesting. Okay. So – you know, the trick is comic-related. We don't know. They just restarted the Doctor Who comic with like Volume 3, and it's got, the married couple in there, and they are basically gone now in the TV show. So are they going to have to restart this comic, Volume 4, when we get the new companion, or are they going to continue on? I'll bet you they'll restart. They'll suddenly disappear for a couple months and then restart.
Maybe.
Just bet you. So anyway, that's with that. Then there's another thing I wanted to mention just because I always get a kick when these things happen. Boom Studios had a book that was written by the aforementioned Keith Giffen and also with Alan Grant called Jeremiah Harm.
Oh, yeah. I was working with the company when that book came out.
I love that book. It's actually being turned into a movie.
Yeah, it's been optioned.
Yeah, well, they've got a promo out apparently for it. And it was drawn by John Mueller and Rael Lira and Rafael Albuquerque. Mm-hmm. And it'll be directed by Timo, and I never get this guy's name right, Vorensola from Iron Sky. I'm sure I fractured that pretty good.
Yeah.
But I find that really, really interesting that that's going to come to – I like that a lot.
I worked with the company during that series. That was their first book to sell out, the first issue, to go into a second printing.
Very cool, because it's just a great book. It's about a tough intergalactic bounty hunter tracking three alien criminals to Earth, where they're searching for a sphere that has the capability of being the most deadly weapon in the cosmos. And, of course, it comes to Earth, which is where all these things come.
Yeah. It's kind of like Lobo in a way, because you have both Alan Grant and Keith Giffen working on it. And this guy, you know, is kind of like an anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
Really good artwork. Rao Lira did the first three issues. And then issues four and five had a then unknown artist, at least in the U.S., named mm-hmm. Rafael Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
He did the last two issues.
Mm-hmm.
And he's gone on to be big stuff over at DC now.
Cool.
Cool.
Very cool.
Back when he was working on like the series, he looked like a 10-year-old kid. He really looked that young. And wow. At that time, he's grown facial hair. And, you know, it's been 6 years, too. He's gotten older. But,
wow.
Yeah, I remember first meeting him at San Diego Comic-Con 2006.
Good for him.
And he got immediately signed up. It didn't take him very long at all to get signed up by DC. I think that convention, he already gotten signed up.
Good. Good for him.
Yeah.
Now, my friend Tom Derenick, who used to be working for DC, apparently he's not. He's over on... I think he's actually working for Boom these days. I saw him inking something, and I saw him penciling part of the Hypernaturals.
Mm.
He does part of it, so it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
One last thing. There's another book that's coming to either the small or the big screen. It's called Undying Love, which is about a vampire.
Oh, yeah.
And it's going to be coming to – let's see. It's going to be turned out by – Joe Carnahan, director of The Gray and the A-Team, has been attached to Preacher and Daredevil, and now he's on Undying Love, and it's going to be, they don't say exactly who, it's going to be a film from Warner Brothers, so I would say it's going to go to the theater, and it'll be produced by Michael DeLuca, Stephen LaRoe, Chris Bender and J.C. Spink. So the original book was from Tom Coker and Daniel Friedman.
Yeah.
And it had to do with Chinese folklore. So that was a different thing about the book, which I liked very much.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's a vampire story.
Yeah.
With the Chinese mythology.
Yeah, I liked that because that was something very different. We hadn't seen that before.
Oh, it's a great series. It was released by Image Comics and... yeah, I got to get real cozy with the two of them two San Diegos ago, back when it was first coming out. And they had announced an option deal back then, but yeah, things have progressed forward now.
Good for them, because I think that's a good thing. As we've said, you know, comics are basically a promotion to how to do a movie. Do this movie. Here's a miniseries. Read this, and you'll see how to do this movie. And I think, you know, Marvel, of course, every comic is a debut for a movie now.
Yeah.
But I think that these things, especially Image, who does different things rather than Long John stuff, they have a good way to do make these things happen.
Yeah.
So kind of happy about that. Kind of happy about that.
It was really cool. Back when the series first came out, they had like these little freebie stuffs to give out, and one of them were these red fortune cookies. And, you know, the red went well because that's a lot of the artwork style. There's like red in there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a typical Image. They tend to do a more stylistic view of coloring rather than just blatant, you know, realistic stuff. They'll tend to have some pages will be darker colored, and some pages will just be sort of all reddish color tones. Others will be bluish. So that's good. It gives it a very different feel from what DC or Marvel will do.
Yeah. Coker and Freeman also did all the covers to Marksman, that Image that I was promoting a while ago.
I love that book. That was a great book.
But, they're talented guys. I love Tom Coker's work. He did the most beautiful cover for Caliber, issue number 3. This is a Radical Publishing book back when I was working with the company.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was like this one with the Lancelot character. It's in a Western, though. Mm-hmm. And he did this beautiful picture. You could look it up for Caliber number 3, where you have this snowy background and... Him and Freeman just have this amazing style. Freeman does the coloring and Coker does like the line art. But no, it's really great, unique style. I hope they do something to kind of capture that look in the book like they did with Frank Miller's Sin City, you know?
As long as they don't do like The Spirit. The Spirit was just awful. God-awful movie. Poor Mr. Miller. I mean, even he has to have a flub every once in a while. So, but anyway, that's enough of the news. Why don't we go ahead and get on to the comics?
Sure.
What comics are coming out that you're looking forward to, John?
All right. This is for December 12th. Some interesting stuff coming out. Dark Horse Comics has The Creep number 4. If you haven't read The Creep, you definitely should. It's a crime mystery series with a main character based off of cult actor Rondo Hatton, who played the Oxford Creeper back a long time ago.
Hence the creep.
Yes. And, he died very early in his career. He had acromegaly. You know, he had weird features like kind of Andre the Giant suffered the same kind of disease. So he was made for horror movies because of his facial features. He had a short career, so he's kind of become a cult figure. And so this main character is based off of him and the look of him.
Cool.
Interesting stuff. Dark Horse also has Criminal Macabre, The Final Night, the 30 Days of Night crossover number 1. It's a 4-issue miniseries. Steve Niles is obviously writing it because it's a crossover of both of his series, Criminal Macabre and 30 Days a Night.
Hmm.
Interesting stuff. If you like Rick Remender's older work, definitely pick up Fear Agent Omnibus Volume 1, hardcover. It is $50, though.
Yikes. So you better really like Rick Remender.
You really got to like it. You got to like want all things Fear Agent. Or maybe you haven't read Fear Agent. It's a good way to... get caught up.
You know, he did a recent... He started off on Captain America number 1, which was interesting. It throws Captain America into an alternate Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually very different from Mr. Brubaker's stuff. So I was happy to see that. We need to see a different direction for Captain America after Ed Brubaker for like 10 years,
yeah,
basically.
Yeah, he had a very long run, and even Brubaker was tired of Captain America. Rick Remender also does The Uncanny Avengers as well, too. The Strain number 9, the very long-running, I think it's 11 or 12-issue series, based off of Guillermo del Toro and Chuck Hogan's book.
Mm.
Involves vampires as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Over on DC side, you have Batman number 15.
Yay.
You have a couple of Before Watchmen titles, Dr. Manhattan number 3 and Rorschach number 3.
Did you notice that one of the Rorschachs has a Lee Bermejo cover?
Yeah, I see that.
Isn't that interesting? Because I like his art.
Yeah. I think that's the regular cover, so...
Yeah.
Definitely grab that one.
Mm-hmm.
Then there is the DC comic, the new 52 Zero Omnibus hardcover, collecting all issues of the Zero titles.
Yeah, you see how much it is, right?
It's $150.
Yeah, you better really like them Zero issues.
You gotta really want to read all 52 books there.
You know, they did this when they did the number 1 issues.
Yeah.
They put out a huge one of those. I actually, when I had a little money, bought that.
Yeah.
It must be like 3 inches thick.
It is. I imagine. I've seen it in stores. Mm-hmm. It's a massive book. Obviously, go to Amazon.
Go to eBay. It's probably cheaper.
Yeah, if you want to get it, just it's going to be discounted online.
Mm-hmm.
And then Frankenstein Agent of Shade number 15. This is tied into the Rotworld storyline. Mm-hmm. The previous two issues, 13 and 14, were tied in, and this is the final issue to be tied into Rotworld. And then it's the second to last issue entirely for Frankenstein mm-hmm. Agent of Shade.
Yeah, I'm sorry to see that. I like that book.
Next month will be the last issue, which is tied to the Rotworld storyline, but as a standalone story that ties everything up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Over on Dynamite, Garth Ennis Battlefield number 2 of 6 goes on sale. The Green Fields.
Mm-hmm.
Sherlock Holmes Liverpool of Demons number 1 goes on sale. This is Leah Moore and her husband co-writing it.
Okay.
Moore's Alan Moore's daughter.
Oh.
So she's done a lot of other work for Dynamite. She did Dracula, based off of the Stoker book, an adaptation of it.
Mm-hmm.
So she does a lot of work with them.
Cool.
On IDW side, James O'Barr returns to The Crow. They got a new miniseries, Crow Skinning the Wolves, number one, goes on sale.
Cool.
The Bastardization of Joe Palooka. It's not the title. It's Joe Palooka, yeah. One. But Joe Palooka was a famous, back before I was born, before a lot of your dads were born, and all you listeners out there, Joe Palooka in the early 30s, probably even before that, he was a comic strip. He was a boxer. And they did a series of short films with Joe Palooka's character. And so they relaunched Joe Palooka, IDW has, but now he's an MMA fighter. And there's no resemblance to the old classic Joe Palooka. So why even call it Joe Palooka?
That's what I never understand. I it's like when they take movies like Mission Impossible. Why even call it Mission Impossible? It's got nothing to do with what the TV show is about.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But, you know, they did this to Popeye. And so I'm not surprised. Popeye went over kind of big. So, but I bought the first one, and that was really all I could stomach.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because, yeah, next on the list is Popeye number 8. That's language, though. That's the guy who wrote and drew the Muppets for Boom. Mm. He's a writer for that. It still doesn't change your mind.
No, not at this point, I'm afraid.
No, sorry to hear that. And then Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 17 goes on sale.
Cool.
Did you happen to catch the annual that came out a month ago?
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, I didn't buy it. I saw it, and I was looking through it.
A little pricey, you know. I think it was an $8 book, but it was big. Written and drawn by Kevin Eastman, who hadn't, like, touched he hadn't drawn, like, the entire interiors for the book for, like, a long time.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing one of the covers of number 17.
That is correct, yes. So, over on Image, Image is releasing a bunch of Image First $1 books. So you could pick up Chew number 1, Fatale number 1, Revival number 1, Saga number 1, Manhattan Project number 1, Thieves of Thieves number 1, and The Walking Dead number 1, all for $1. So, there you go. And Walking Dead number 105 goes on sale as well, December 12th. And, you know, speaking of Walking Dead, you know, on the last month's October sales charts, Walking Dead moved up. It's been moving up, you know. Obviously, like, you had the 100 issue that was number one, massive amount. But usually the series was, like, in the top 100s. Then I had made notes back in September that, hey, this is in the top 20s. And then it moved up since then, so.
Cool. Well, the TV show's on right now, so I'm not surprised.
So, yeah, a lot of people are reading the trades, caught up on the trades, you know, because it's now in the third season. And they're like, okay, I can't wait for the next trade. I'm going to start picking up the single issues. That's at least my reasoning for it. And then if you also have a lot of money to spend, if the DC Zero Omnibus didn't, like, put you out, you could pick up The Walking Dead Omnibus Volume 4 for $100.
Well, there's also the signed and numbered edition.
You want to throw in an extra 50.
Yeah, 150. Yeah.
Yeah. You could be spending a lot of money if you're very wealthy and have a lot of shelf space.
Yeah, yeah.
Over on Marvel's side, you have The Amazing Spider-Man, get this, number 699.1.
Lovely. Lovely.
You know, there's going to be a point, there's just, you know, obviously it's going to end at 700.
Yeah.
Not really, and they're going to reboot it.
Well, you know what they're going to call it, right?
I forgot. Same right.
Superior Spider-Man.
That's it.
Superior Spider-Man. I mean, the adjectival. We need a non-adjectival Spider-Man. Yeah. We did that once before, but I ultimate superior. I mean, you know, come on now. We've had spectacular. I mean, you know,
sure.
Well, you'll have the marvelous Spider-Man before long, I bet.
Yes, the uncanny Spider-Man.
Yeah.
If you missed out on the Marvel Now reboot, Avengers number 1, and the second printing's on sale. Then you have Avengers Arena number one on sale. This is kind of ripping off of Hunger Games.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got that going on. Cable and X-Force number one goes on sale with a bunch of different variants to it. So there you go. Even Joe Quesada gets on in on it with a variant and a sketch variant.
Wow.
I'm sure you're looking forward to this. Daredevil, Mark Waid's Volume 2 trade paperback goes on sale.
Cool.
Fantastic Four number 2 from the reboot, Marvel.
Yeah.
Iron Man number 4. Didn't seem so long ago, but then I remember, oh yeah, they released 2 titles a month. So there you go. That's why.
Yeah.
And then we were talking about it earlier, so this should be a little bit of a surprise to you, but Monsters, Inc. number 1.
Oh, I didn't realize that was the Disney Monsters, Inc. Okay.
It's Pixar, you know.
Which, okay, yeah.
Yeah, Disney owns, and Boom had the license to it at one point. But it's a whopping 2-issue miniseries.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't feel so bad then.
Two.
Yeah, oh, man. The Marvel really worked hard to get that 1-2-issue miniseries.
I know.
See, now, there's if you look farther down, there's the Superior Spider-Man poster.
Yes.
Talking about Superior, I'm going to get off of the Disney stuff as fast as I can, but the Superior stuff.
You think they're listening?
Yeah.
We already, you know, talked Star Wars and...
Yeah. Oh, boy.
They don't own We're the Nerd yet, guys.
No, 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 not yet.
Not yet. As soon as they do, they're going to can us.
Yeah. Okay, anything else?
That's it for me. What are you looking forward to?
Okay, I'll start from Marvel and work my way up.
Sure.
And I mean that literally. There is Dark Avengers 184 is coming out, which some people really like. I've yet to warm up to it, but it's kind of interesting. There's a Morbius the Living Vampire poster for $8.99 that I find interesting. They're going to try to bring that character back, you know, and do stuff with him. There's a Thunderbolts poster. They're doing a whole bunch of posters, I guess. They're trying to capture the holiday market.
Sure.
By putting a whole bunch of those out. You know, I used to buy a lot of posters, but I don't anymore because they just sat wrapped up. And when I would move, I would just throw them all out. So none of that.
Not since college. And then I've had girlfriends, and now my wife are just like, yeah, that's... It's not a dorm room. You can't have a poster on your wall.
Yeah. Into Image Comics and Age of Bronze, which is always a good book, because number 32 is resolicited. That's $3.50. There is the Haunt number 28, which is taken over by a new team. We don't have the old folks on it.
Yeah.
There's also Perhaponauts Volume 2, Treasure Obscura, trade paperback. Todd DeZego I interviewed once before about Perhaponauts, and they've got a Perhaponauts Down Under. I think it's Danger Down Under right now going on, so I like to promote that. Fun book. Very much like, if you've ever read Atomic Robo, it's like that. And great fun. I really enjoy those books. There's also, talking about expensive books, there's a $50 thing from IDW called Star Trek The Newspaper Strips.
Oh, yeah.
They came out about 30 years ago now. And
a while ago when the news had hit.
Yeah, and it's going to be, you know, it's like they did the Batman strips a while back, which was kind of nice. I bought some of those because every strip has to have something happen in it.
Yeah.
So you get a fast-moving story, and unfortunately it's $50, which is kind of a lot.
That does suck. These were from, like, I think the late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
So I'm not surprised by that. There's Peter Cannon Thunderbolt, which is on double secret probation right now. Number 4, it's got Alex Ross covers. Masks just came out, which I liked. I got that and I liked it. It's Alex Ross art in it for a change.
For only the first issue, he does.
Oh, I hate when he does that. But Peter Cannon Thunderbolt has kind of gotten chatty. There's lots and lots of huge words balloons, and I'm just kind of like, I'm wondering how much longer I'm going to hang on to it. You know, it's too much. Anyway, getting to DC, lots of good things. Batgirl, I mentioned Batgirl losing its writer. That number 15 is going to be out. Batman Arkham Unhinged number 9. Batman and Robin number 15. Second Frank Miller statue, Batman Black and White, coming out, $80 roughly. And there's also Deathstroke, Demon Knights, which is still pretty good. I like that. Green Lantern, the animated series based on the TV show that was unceremoniously taken off the air by Cartoon Network, which should be back in January, so hopefully.
Yeah.
Green Lantern Corps number 15 is out. Grifter, which is coming to an end, I believe. Then there is the Legion Lost, which is also coming to the end, to an end. Ravagers number 7. Saucer Country, which I liked a lot more when the presidential election was going on. Now that they've got a presidential election going on in there, I'm a little worn out of ours.
Yeah.
I'm not so excited about Saucer Country as I used to be. Suicide Squad, Superboy, number 15, and Team 7, number 3. Used to be everything was the same number, but now it's not.
Right.
And also from Dark Horse, we'll end up with that one. There is Michael Avon Oeming's The Victories, number 5 of 5, which I like. And another book I really like and I think deserves the promotion,
sure.
Granville Bette Noire, which is done by Brian Talbot. Brian Talbot, he's a British writer and artist, and he's done two of these before, and they've been good. It was Granville Mona Moore and just plain old Granville. And it's a very different, it's an anthropomorphic, the main guy is a badger, he's a detective,
mm-hmm.
and it's very much, you know, it's a very different world, you know, France basically beat up the UK and run the UK from Paris.
Wow.
And stuff like that. So it's a very different location, very different things going on. And like I said, it's all animals. You do see some humans, but they're in a subservient role. They're usually waiters and waitresses and stuff like that.
Yeah,
so it's pretty interesting book. I like it real well. It's hardcover. It's always hardcover, and just a very different comic. And you know me, I love different and unusual, so
yeah.
I very much like that. So I thought that's a good note to end on. Anything else that we should talk about?
Nothing much, unless you want to talk more Disney.
No. On that Disney-rific note, we will draw to a close this week's news and previews. Thanks, Gianluca, and we'll talk with you next week as always.
Same here, Wayne.
And that's a wrap for this episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Be sure to be back next week when I have the interview I've been promising for a long time, a very special one, and something landmark, very good for my 75th episode. But until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.